My name is David Shirk. I'm the director of the Transborder Institute at the University of San Diego and currently a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars here in Washington, D.C. And it's a great pleasure to be able to chair and moderate today's panel on bilateral cooperation to address the challenge of human trafficking. We're getting off to a late start here because we've had some minor technical difficulties, but we'll try to make that time up through very strict moderating. And I'll be having a slight change in the order as we load up one of the other presentations. We're going to begin with our furthest to the left panelist, Antonio Escobedo, followed by Oscar González Mendivil, and later by our presentation from Akil Baldwin and Pamela Diegues. Antonio Escobedo is the director of the of Consular and Migratory Affairs for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Guatemala. He, prior to his appointment in 2009, he was the interim director for consular affairs and also served as the first director for migratory affairs. Having worked in the field of foreign affairs for over 20 years, Mr. Escobedo has great experience in bilateral political issues. He served as the director of bilateral affairs, the deputy director for North American affairs, and the chief of the Department of Mexican Affairs for the Guatemalan government. He's also held the position of interim head of integration issues within the Directorate of Integration in the area of international multilateral and economic affairs at the Foreign Relations Ministry, and has served as a minister counselor in the Assembly of Guatemala and Mexico. In the Embassy of Guatemala and Mexico, and in the Embassy of Guatemala in Honduras. With no further delay, please welcome Antonio Escobedo.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you and good morning. Thanks to the organizers, to CSIS, dear fellow panelists. Greetings from Guatemala, and it is an honor to meet with you and to share with you some comments, knowing that we will be able to share agreement for the benefit of our societies that are being affected by the issues in discussion. Cooperation to address the challenge of human trafficking is seen from different perspectives that are related to experience. In the Mesoamerican biological corridor, there is human trafficking and that illegal trade that comes to the countries of North America and also to other areas where organized crime entities are a part of. These are some of the most salient features of the new millennium, and like previous migration flows that have different origins and destinations. We can observe that due to the immigration flows amongst our countries, there are millions of people flowing in different immigration capacities, tourism and visitors, and this has contributed to increasing the vulnerability of thousands of people, especially the vulnerable populations such as minors, adolescents, and women. These are the segments that are most exposed to being victims of human trafficking. In that scenario, Human trafficking is a social phenomenon that is increasing in proportion in the Americas, affecting Guatemala and other countries as well. The discussion around the scourge of human trafficking on the national agenda is a priority, and that includes several agencies that work in this area, seeking to develop actions and to implement them to fight against human trafficking. I.e., there is an interagency commission against human trafficking made up by several executive agencies. They have the role of controlling and policing and attorney general and courts and agencies that give assistance to the victims of human trafficking. Recently, in February of 2009, a law was enacted specifically against sexual violence, exploitation, and human trafficking. Guatemala is undergoing a transition due to the creation of this law. There's a new secretariat, and by law, mandates that were before being taken over by several institutions are now channeled into this new secretariat. In 2009, in light of this new law, there have been cases brought forward, and we are seeking to create new facilities such as a shelter. We did not have a specific shelter for the victims of human trafficking. We did have other types of shelters, but we have decided, due to the transition, to establish a shelter for the victims of human trafficking. We have been cooperating with other countries that have experience in this field. There is public policy prior to the enactment of the law that brought forth the enactment of the law, actually. We were working with the Interagency Commission and making sure that actions and steps are being taken as needed. There are multiple actions that we are working on. I don't have time to review them in detail. But due to the work of the Interagency Committee and the public policy and the new law, several actions are being taken. There are bilateral efforts also carried out within the framework of the bilateral relation. There is a new memorandum directed to children and women in cooperation with Mexico and El Salvador and the U.S. for a few years now. Unfortunately, these instruments are no longer in force, and we are now working on a replacement or a extension of the mandate. Within the bilateral cooperation. We are also working with Mexico since 1987. We established a binational commission that has been growing as the agenda has been expanding. There are 13 bilateral working groups. One of them is specific to immigration issues, and that involves the illegal trafficking of migrants, border issues, and because of the crossings along the border by land, and the Maya nation is a nation that we share in the south of Mexico and the whole Guatemalan territory. There is a cultural relation. There is a commonality of issues, and Mexico at some point in its recent history was perhaps neglecting the south of its country. Before, it was easier for people to go to the south of Mexico than to the capital, so there are family ties, and that is not broken up by borders, and so we are working in borders, cities and villages to improve the flow of people. Now, since March of 2008, there are immigration forms for local visitors that allow those who have to visit the area often to travel, and they have to renew the form every 5 years, and they can travel easily. There is also a working force that travels to Mexico for agricultural purposes into Chiapas, and they also have a immigration form for border immigrant workers. This has allowed the immigration flows to be recognized and identified. On a regional level, we also have a regional conference on immigration. Central America and the Dominican Republic are member countries, and Mexico. And this has allowed to take several actions that are binding for the members. There is a network for liaison officials on human trafficking and migrant crimes. It affects the repatriation of adolescents and children, and the training of regional immigration and custom officials to improve relations with those who may become victims of human trafficking. There is another regional initiative that established an alliance for cooperation to fight against human trafficking. This we have determined that is a public good, made up of Costa Rica, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Guatemala. We are trying to have the same standards, starting from the local working committees for care and prevention. We are working to have the same standards. I think I'm running out of time. We believe that the support and cooperation of international organizations on this topic and the cooperation of civil society is key. This has allowed us to join efforts, and we have made great progress with the input of specialized agencies. We have a few recommendations quickly. We foresee that the population groups that may be victim of human trafficking are mostly coming from countries that are least developed. We want to put place emphasis on more development, not only for the victims of human trafficking, but the places of origin of immigrants. We need to continue with these types of examples, such as the one with Mexico, the ongoing working group. There are other areas. For instance, the U.S., taking into account that most of the victims of human trafficking have been migrants who were seeking employment and became victims of human trafficking. There still are many that are taking chances and traveling to the States without documents. They may be relatives sometimes of U.S. residents and citizens who seek to bring their children or spouses that are outside the country because of immigration regulations. If they were allowed to have access to a visa, those who are children or spouses, and not wait for 3 or 5 years due to the rules, we believe that these potential travelers may not have to resort to traveling without documents and expose themselves to some of these crimes.
Thank you very much.
Gonzalez Mendeville is the technical coordinator on violent crimes against women and human trafficking in the division in the office of Mexico's Attorney General. He received his law degree from the Escuela Libre de Derecho in Sinaloa and carried out advanced coursework specializing in penal sciences, completing his master's degree and a doctoral degree in law at the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México. Mr. Gonzalez has served in a number of positions, including chief lawyer for the Universidad de Occidente, assessment officer for the commissioner of the Instituto Nacional para el Combate de las Drogas, Secretary General of the Escuela Libre de Derecho in Sinaloa, Executive Secretary for the Jalisco State Commission of Human Rights, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Sinaloa, Director of the Culiacan Campus, Campus of the Universidad del Occidente, and Director of Study and Analysis for the Assistant Attorney General of Investigations Specialized in Federal Crimes for the Attorney General's Office in Mexico. Thank you very much, Mr. Gonzalez. Let me pull up your presentation. If it's here.
Lo que aparece la presentación
While we're waiting for the presentation to show up on the screen, we'll begin because we are they let us know three times when we're running too long. And the last one has a drawing. I don't want you to see it. I wanted to talk to you from the point of view of an institution that has the responsibility for of applying the laws against trafficking, human trafficking, and what are the limitations of these laws and other factors that are involving carrying out this work. And first of all, I'd like to mention that the legal framework has characteristics that define the work that can be carried out. Mexico, as many of our countries, has certain characteristics that are shared and others that are different. It's evident that there's a supremacy of the Constitution, a principle which reigns, but also the division of powers. And also that it's been established as a federal state. There's federal legislation as well as state legislation, which makes up the Republic of Mexico. And this is important with regard to human trafficking. At the end of 2007, the law for preventing and sanctioning human trafficking, this was issued. It's a federal law, and what this means is that it is in effect at the same time as other laws in the specific states. This law has a legal definition of what human trafficking is, which is extremely important, because when we speak about this subject, many times we are speaking with regard to the phenomenon in it as a definition, but to fight it, we have to use the legal definition, which is not exact always in agreement with the sociological and criminological description of it. So following the Palermo Protocol, our law has three large categories: the definition of activities, the definition of means, and also the goals of these activities. In accordance with this definition, human trafficking involves promoting, soliciting, offering, facilitating, getting, transporting, turning over, and receiving. So these are all the different conducts that are involved in it. And then exploitation is a whole other crime, and it's worth emphasizing this. So the sentences for this crime, which is basic level, would be 6 to 12 years, but it can even reach 27 years of prison for aggravating circumstances. A subject that is very complicated is that with regard to legal jurisdiction. In accordance with the law itself, Article 3, the crime of human trafficking is a federal law as long as it begins in another country and has effects in Mexico. Or, on the other hand, if it's initiated here in Mexico and has effects in another country. Or the crimes are committed in our territory of our nation, but also are supported by Article 50 of the Organic Law of Judicial Power of the Federation, which has a catalog, a different list of situations on the federal law. And as an example, I might mention that when one is a public servant and they participate somehow or as a victim, it would be strange, but it's possible, legally speaking, or when it's carried out in a space that is federal, some type of a location that is of federal property. These are criminal, federal crimes, and so on the 1st of February 2008, they created the Prosecutor's Office for Violence Against Women and Human Trafficking, and I represent this office. But this Prosecutor's Office does not deal with all federal human trafficking crimes, when there is organized crime involved, then the specialized organization dealing with organized crime would deal with it. When there are crimes committed in foreign countries, then there's a special unit for investigating crimes in other countries, and then what remains is what is under our responsibility. And then you might ask, well, what's left if we remove these other two components? So we can go on to the next slide. This graph shows in red the responsibility for all the states of the Federation, and in blue you can see the federal level. And then there's a breakdown according to the areas of responsibility in the organizations that have to do with the subject of human trafficking. I'd like to mention that of the 32 existing federal entities, 28 of them have regulations as a crime. They've defined human trafficking as a crime. Even in Nuevo León, they just approved the law, passed the law, but it's not been published yet. And then still there are four states that have not legally defined the crime. In order to carry out the work that is part of our responsibility, in addition to the little part of the pie that's ours, I have three agents of the public ministry for the whole country. Once we were assigned the responsibility of human trafficking, there were not new positions created or an increase in the budget except to build a shelter, which has been built and is operating now. What have we done with these two people and the little bit of the pie that we're responsible for? Since February 1st of 2008 until the 15th of September of this year, we initiated 39 investigations, and 19 of them were completed. That's about 49%. And the problems of responsibility make us see the way these are resolved. In most of the cases, this was by saying that we're not competent or responsible for this, and we passed it on to the responsible agency. And I also should tell you that only in our area, there were two cases that were actually presented to the judges. And we know that the rest of the cases which arose, remember, we're not the only ones who can do it. The rest of them, there are three more cases, in other words, five in all, that were brought to the judges during this period of time. And in addition, we have carried out searches and detained around nine people. We have been involved with 48 possible victims in our investigations, and the shelter that I mentioned, which we just opened, has 15 people there who are not necessarily from our investigations. There are other organizations that do carry out investigations, and they can transfer their victims to this shelter, which is not just for us. And then there are other victims, around 107 of them, who have received support even though they haven't really become people who made claims, formal claims of their possible trafficking victimship. So we have a couple of cases that I wanted to mention to you that we've participated in as part of our efforts. The first of the cases is one which began here in the U.S. This is the case of Rugerio. In August of 2008, some people who were members of this family were accused formally in a federal court in the Northern Court of Georgia for trafficking people and others, other types of trafficking. In this case, we, as a prosecutor's office and our and FEVIMTRA is the acronym, FEVIMTRA. We began to work on this case, and we had a series of meetings which included ICE, CIEDO, which is a special organization to handle organized crime, and SINAPI, which is the intelligence aspect of the prosecutor's office. And the information that ICE provided was utilized by the prosecutor's office for organized crime to the extent that on the 14th of September, searches were carried out in Tlaxcala, and this resulted in the picking up of three people, including Cristina Hernandez, whose alias is Alondra, and she is actually a fugitive of the U.S. So these are cases that we have participated in to contribute our expertise. And the second case, which is the Lelin case, which is the case of a citizen from Canada who crossed the border to the U.S. 20 years ago or so, and then crossed the border in Tijuana. We had a complaint from a civilian organization called Alliance for Internet Security, and they let us know that there were pages that contained child pornography. An investigation was initiated with the support of the cybernetic police, and we were able to detect these pages and achieve enough information to request a search warrant from a judge in order to go into this person's home in Tijuana. Once the residence was located and the person identified, we were very fortunate because this person was found at that time, at the time of the search, operating right then, those very pages on which he placed child pornography. So more than 40 million child pornography images were collected, and four different sites were being supplied with these images. And I'd like to tell you a little story because this happens in operation activities. Our ability to store these images was very, very overstated. We had two disks, and we had to buy 12 more hard disks to be able to save this material. And it's a little bit ridiculous, but as an anecdote, we had to purchase at the last minute 12 hard disks in order to record all this information, and my institution denied payment of this because they said that we should have foreseen the need. They should have been bought in advance. So now I owe for 12 hard disks in my organization. So in the end, these internet sites and the characteristics of the children that appear in the images led us to believe that we needed to create working groups, and therefore we have invited the participation of the FBI and the Mounted Police of Canada. So we have a group that's been operating with regard to exploitation of what we have found in this search. So we have reached certain conclusions. We have cases we've worked on thanks to IOM, and also thanks to reports on from consulates in Guatemala and other cases in Costa Rica. And it seems to us that cooperation on an international level is essential. We have the ability to continue with investigations of crimes that have occurred in other countries if in that country there was no punishment for some reason and the victims are Mexican. The crime, in accordance to our law, can be federal in this way, and we can investigate it through the organizations that we have in the National Prosecutor's Office.
Move ahead with our next two speakers.
So we have the pleasure of standing between you and lunch.
Yeah, sorry.
The last one before lunch.
I think I can get this up here. Full screen, oh, got it, sorry. Our last two speakers are Akil Baldwin from the United States Department of Homeland Security's Immigration and Customs and Enforcement Agency, as well as Pamela Diegues. Akil Baldwin is a special agent with the Department of Homeland Security's ICE office, based here in the Washington, D.C. field office. Special Agent Baldwin is assigned to the Human Smuggling and Trafficking Unit, where he investigates alien smuggling and complex alien smuggling and human trafficking investigations, and has been with ICE since 2002. Pamela Diegues is a program manager at the United States Department of Homeland Security's ICE office, particularly the Office of International Affairs, International Programs and Policy, where she oversees the asylum program and works on policy issues in various areas, including human trafficking and forced labor. Prior to joining ICE, Ms. Diegues was a Presidential Management Fellow at the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, in Refugee Asylum and International Operations. While at USCIS, Ms. Diegues completed assignments as an asylum officer at the Arlington Asylum Office, Fraud Detection National Security Unit of the United States, of the Los Angeles Asylum Office, and Asylum Division Headquarters in Washington, D.C. Ms. Diegues has also worked for the Department of Justice Executive Office for Immigration Review in Arlington, Virginia, and has volunteered at the Asian American Justice Center. Welcome to you both.
So just to give you some background about the Office of International Affairs, our mission is to protect the U.S. by enhancing security through international investigations involving transnational criminal organizations that are responsible for illegal movement of people, goods, and technology, and through strong and integral intelligence and removal programs. And so our vision is to become the primary component for DHS international law enforcement operations. We'd like to remain flexible to meet ever-changing challenges and threats in the global environment by attracting professionals in our division, fostering teamwork, and valuing innovation. And so as you can see, ICE Office of International Affairs priorities are twofold, once with investigative priorities and one with the presidential priorities. So first in line is human smuggling and trafficking, definitely a priority for us. Money laundering, national security investigations, which includes export control and munitions control, Operation Predator, which basically deals with prosecution of child sex tourism, contraband smuggling, as well as the visa security program and container security initiative. So our international footprint is global. We have 60 offices in 43 countries, 149 headquarters staff located here in the D.C. area, and 382 personnel overseas staff, which includes 132 locally engaged staff. And so as you can see, our area of responsibility does span the globe. So specifically with our efforts in Mexico, the funding for our Global Trafficking in Persons, or GTIP program, comes from the President's $50 million TIP initiative. So in 2003, President Bush announced a $50 million initiative to combat trafficking in persons. And so overall, the projects support rescue, victim assistance, vocational programs, campaigns against child sex tourism, and law enforcement task forces, with a greater emphasis on direct training for criminal justice professionals. And so NGOs, international organizations, and government entities have used these funds to protect victims, prosecute traffickers, and increase public awareness, which threatens freedom, health, and national security. So specifically, the Office of International Affairs has received $2 million to assist the Mexican government to develop an anti-trafficking investigative program. And our program started in 2005 with the placement of an ICE program coordinator in Mexico City. And so ICE has expended resources for agents, training programs, outreach, and logistical assistance for the Mexican investigative teams. So in terms of our ongoing efforts, one is the development of a training calendar tailored to human trafficking cases and focusing on victim attention and assistance, evidence collection and preservation, crime scene management, and investigative techniques. This includes coordination of investigations with ICE and various Mexican prosecutorial and investigative agencies, the Attorney General of Mexico, and also the Federal Investigations Agency State. So assistance to the government of Mexico to promote legislation to enhance penalties for violators of trafficking is also provided. And in addition, ICE and the Department of Justice are working on a study tour with PGR to look at successful facilities in the U.S. that service trafficking victims, and hopefully will serve as a model for future projects in Mexico. So as was mentioned in the earlier presentation, big success in terms of the first TIP case charged by the government of Mexico. It was an ICE-led GTIP investigation with various agencies in cooperation with each other. Based on an ICE investigation, two individuals were indicted. ICE did coordinate with attaché Mexico agents and the government of Mexico for assistance. And the two individuals were arrested. And they were indicted in Georgia for transportation of an individual with the intent to engage in prostitution, sex trafficking of children by force, fraud, or coercion, bringing in and harboring certain aliens, and importing aliens for immoral purposes. So this is really the fruition of the partnership between Homeland Security and the government of Mexico. So just to give you an idea of domestically what we deal with in terms of cases that have a nexus to Mexico, there's one case in the Special Agent in Charge, or SAC, New York office, where there was an investigation initiated in 2003, and the mother of a trafficking victim actually came to the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City to report that her daughter had been kidnapped and kept against her will in New York. The investigation identified a Mexico-based family group engaged in the smuggling of young Mexican women into the United States and holding them against their will and forcing them into prostitution. And so since 1991, the investigation showed that male members of the Corretto family lured young girls to their hometown of Tlaxcala, Mexico, where they resided until the age of 18. And so the Corretto males did father children with many of the victims. And the victims were smuggled into the United States, housed in New York apartments, with their traffickers. The victim's children did remain in Mexico with the trafficker's mother. And so once in the United States, the traffickers forced the victims into prostitution by threatening harm to their children in Mexico. So these are photos of some of the defendants. Seven defendants did plead guilty to sex trafficking, forced labor, alien smuggling for financial gain, and importing aliens for immoral purposes. Two of them were sentenced to 50 years and one to 25 years for sex trafficking. And in January 07, Mexico did extradite the mother of the Corretto brothers to the U.S. She did plead guilty to sex trafficking. And as of a couple weeks ago, we have not heard of any news of the sentence yet, but we are monitoring to see when that does happen.
Okay, and this is another investigation that I'll talk about that I was actually involved in. Even though it was more of an alien smuggling case, it just shows the great cooperation between us here in the United States and Mexico, as well as other countries. The Ibrahim Boateng investigation, these guys were part of a network that smuggled East African nationals from the Horn of Africa into the United States. They all exploited the laws here in the United States, knowing that these East Africans could be afforded the right to apply for asylum, and they capitalize on this by fraudulently obtaining Mexican visas and other documents to make sure these individuals could get into Mexico and make their way into the United States where they'd apply for asylum. We worked closely with the Mexican and Belizean authorities because this is where both of these individuals were based out of, and we ultimately arrested Boateng. We actually expelled out of Belize into the United States. We arrested him November 2007, and with a provisional arrest warrant, we arrested Hakim Ibrahim in Mexico City, where he was extradited in 2008. Both of them have since pled out, and Boateng got he received 3 years, and I think Ibrahim received 5 years. Identifying alien smuggling and trafficking organizations, we continue to work with the attaché offices and foreign counterparts to identify and disrupt the organizations. This goes both ways. Basically assist with identifying targets and witnesses. We may have someone identified, but we've continued to work with our other counterparts because they may know of another piece to the puzzle that we haven't quite identified yet. Assist with gathering evidence. Of course, this is twofold. We may be able to, perfect example, we were actually working a case and with the Colombians, and we actually worked with them, but turned out they had more evidence and their laws were a little more stringent with regards to this, so we basically turned it over to them and continued to work it and just passed everything on to help them with their prosecution. As I said, continue to work with foreign governments to arrest and prosecute, assist with extradition and expulsion, and identify new routes used by smugglers. Once again, we may have something or we may have a route that we think that's going on, and we may have it pegged, but also the other individuals that are down there in these other countries may understand these routes better, or they may identify new routes that we haven't yet. Basically, this is a team effort. The next one. Working with NGOs, non-government organizations, basically continue to work with the NGO community to identify potential smuggling trafficking victims. Here in the D.C. area, basically nationwide, we're responsible for every quarter going out and providing outreaches to the non-government organizations on what we do and how we can assist with victims. And basically, the NGOs, sometimes victims may come there and we may not hear about it. I mean, you guys are sometimes the first line of letting us know. So where we can go interview these people and identify them and hopefully conduct an investigation or a successful investigation on some of these victims.
And so ICE does provide outreach training to NGOs. For example, the Office of International Affairs hosted 3 forced labor, human trafficking, and child sex tourism training events this past summer. To cover the Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, the conference was held in Casablanca, Morocco. To cover Asia, it was held in Manila, Philippines. And then the Americas, it was held in Panama City, Panama. As well as the ICE Office of Investigation Special Agent in Charge in D.C. also held an NGO outreach event on September 16th. And then our office held a non-governmental organization liaison working group with our first meeting earlier this month as well. And so the outreach event does include public service announcements, updates on several cases, as well as touching base to ensure that the NGO community is aware of the services that ICE does have.
And these are just some of the public awareness campaigns, public service announcements, billboard transit ads, and trafficking indicator wallet size cards, which you'll see coming up. We'll go to the next one. It's just in Chicago, 2008. San Diego. And these are just the cards that we pass out, indicators of trafficking. I'm sure many of you have seen these before. And indicators of trafficking, the difference between human trafficking and human smuggling. And links between smuggling organizations and other organizations. Although I work primarily alien smuggling cases, I've never seen smugglers smuggling aliens and drugs at the same time. But if you look at the big picture, a lot of drugs get into the country coming through Central America and into Mexico and then into the United States. So routes may be similar. So that's just something to just keep your eyes open for. Go next one. And resources. I wanted to put this up there, projectvisa.com. This is a good website just because it gives you an idea of the world and the different countries where you can travel visa-free. So say, for instance, you click on the United States. It'll tell you all the countries where you can come into the United States visa-free, or say Mexico. It can tell you all the countries that you can enter into Mexico visa-free. It's a good way and a good resource, because the reason why I say this is because we arrested an alien smuggler, and he was so savvy about how he smuggled people into the U.S., and I asked him, how was he so smart about all this stuff, and he basically told me that he studied this this website in and out, and it actually updates, and it's very good. It's very resourceful, so I highly recommend it. Also, ICE.gov, and then the anonymous tip line to DHS.ICE2.ICE. So.
And David, could you go back to the trafficking indicator card one more? And so basically, I just wanted to point out on the indicators of trafficking, in terms of ICE's approach as well as Homeland Security, it is a victim-centered approach to ensuring that we identify bona fide victims of trafficking. And so trafficking indicators, in terms of people that are on the border and on the ground, are trained to see what kinds of indicators there are. So these are just simple questions to ask, whether who has possession of the identification documents, who has control of it, can the victim freely contact friends or family. So all of these are indicators to identify a trafficking victim. And then on the next page, just to touch up on the differences between trafficking and smuggling, and to ensure that people know that they aren't interchangeable, smuggling is transportation-based and trafficking is exploitation-based. So at the very basic definition of it, we want to ensure that that people are aware how trafficking victims are identified.
Thank you very much. We have approximately 15 minutes for 16 minutes actually for Q&A. If we can pass the mics around, I'll abuse my privilege as.
We have 15 minutes. And I'll ask to pass the mics around. And in the meantime, I'll abuse my privilege as chair to throw out a question. To what extent does undocumented status factor into the exploitation of people that are moving in? Akhil, you mentioned a trafficker looking at ways of moving people freely into the country. But are the bulk of the victims that you're dealing with in the U.S. case, are they more vulnerable because of their undocumented status? When Congress passed the TIP Act back in 2000, that was the special population that was identified as potential victims of trafficking. Mm-hmm. To what extent is that actually how this is bearing out? Are we seeing people, undocumented immigrants, targeted in that way? And to what extent does documented status matter in Mexico or in Guatemala?
That's a really good question. I'll try and answer that as best I can. But to basically say, just to go back as an example to the East Africans, they're afforded, or they know that they may be entitled to these benefits when they come into the United States, and they can apply for political asylum, and depending on an interview, they can get it. Now, of course, a lot of these smugglers will know that, and they will capitalize on it and charge these people and exploit them for that. So, and then also, too, with regards to trafficking, it'd be the same way. Say, for instance, a Russian female wants to come over and dreams of becoming a model or something like that. Well, they can exploit that by using using flyers or using different lures to get them to say, yes, you can come to the United States and we'll smuggle you through, or you can come and work here in this country for a couple of years and then get status here and then move on. So they exploit it, and, I mean, they study it. So I guess the answer to your question is that, I mean, they know it and they understand what's going on. It's not just something that they do. They're just smuggling them in. I mean, they actually have it down almost to a science, at least the ones that I've seen. Does that answer your question?
That's fine.
Okay.
With regard to Mexico, I think that we all recognize that the immigration flows are a vulnerability factor for victims, and the points in which they're able to cross are the same, and probably people cross, human beings, whether regardless of the goal. And we've been also detecting a new way on the border with the U.S. that human trafficking is carried out, in which criminal groups are retaining them once they cross the border and demand a specific payment. And if they do not provide that, then they take revenge against them, and it can include death. Thank you very much. In the case of Guatemalans who are traveling, there is a situation that has arisen. The undocumented migrant is the most vulnerable one, and they're doing this through routes that are not the regular route, and therefore they're being sought out by criminals, attacked by them. And there is a situation which has been noted in this way. In the U.S., Mexico, and Guatemala, in our legislation, we have passed some provisions that indicate that people who show that they are victims of trafficking, then they're immediately able to receive their documentation. It's if they wish, if they request it. It's a voluntary thing on the part of the victim. So this has led to measures that could require follow-up and arrest the people who are trafficking people, and they also have to protect them because these people are victims of trafficking from their place of origin. Migrants, in their desire to reach another place where they've been told that their life will be better, or they've been convinced of that, or are convinced, they will even pay to be trafficked, and then along the road they notice that that's not the case, rather they're being smuggled, because these are international bands of criminals who are from the town. I mean, trafficking begins in the small town, and these people utilize them along their whole transit route.
Any questions out here? I've got more. Right up front here. And if you could please just identify yourself and your institution.
Maria Berliner Rilaten.
Yeah, Berlin from...
Señor Oscar González. En el refugio, ¿qué actividades...
What activities in the... are given to the women in the shelters to kind of become more a part of society once again? That's a very good question. Thank you. As you know, one of the key problems that we have is that the victims do not identify themselves as victims. And if the subject of trafficking for the goal of sexual exploitation, it's even greater in the case of smuggling, because they think that there's a bad relationship between work that is healed with paying money in order victims who come into the shelter, and I should say the shelter is not a temporary place where they come in and leave again. No, this is for very serious cases in which the victim may be at risk as far as their safety or their life is concerned. This is for the most serious cases, and most of the 15 are also coming from a very serious case investigations of organized crime. And one of the key points is, what are we going to do with them, with the victims later? Are we going to treat them and help them psychologically, medically, give them legal advice? But what will we do then? What kind of a life will we be preparing them for? They're used to earning money and the options for work that they will have after that. Maybe being a legal assistant or medical assistant will probably not handle their needs for a certain social level. So there's a process of understanding the victim. That's how the protocol is designed for treating these people. We need to make them aware of their situation. What they were experiencing does not pertain to a situation that humanly can be justifiable or ethically correct. And then they're given options, financial options, not for support by the Mexican state, at least in some cases, very specific cases that are beyond the norm, but rather to teach them how to operate certain types of their own businesses, which they can access resources through government supports of small companies, small business.
We have one up here.
Sí, gracias.
Yes, thank you. I have heard a lot about the subject of migration and trafficking and people being moved, people moving. But what we have noted with regard to the environment is they're also moving people inside the country, and working for drug traffickers is not really something they want to be doing, or those who are working in the jungles, in the wood lumber camps, and they're in debt, and then they're required to work to pay back the debt, and it's forced labor. There are ILO studies being carried out in this area, and they're working also on ships, and they are fishing, and many people die doing this. So in countries in South America, plans against forced labor have been established. Also inside the countries, there are policies. I wonder if any of you, your countries have policies of this sort. Well, yes, I believe that we cannot speak about this subject of human trafficking as if it were just its own monolith. It has many components. In fact, every case of trafficking is different from the other. What works in one maybe doesn't work in another. And the subject of internal trafficking is real. In our country, as large as it is, it provides for this sort of international and internal domestic migrant flows of trafficking. And we've seen cases where the goal was for sexual exploitation that goes from one state in Mexico to another, but also forced labor as well, not just sexual. So it's very common to see that on the Pacific route, which is that where there are crops that begin in Michoacán, Guerrero, and then go up to along the Pacific side, Jalisco, Nayarit, and Sinaloa, and end in Baja California with the wine vineyards. They change crops as they go, and in many of these cases, the working conditions that they face once they reach the area seem nothing like what was promised. They have no freedom of movement. We had a claim made by a woman who was denied medical attention for a medical abortion, which is a miscarriage in English. The person spent 2 days without receiving medical attention because they believed that it was just a way to avoid going to work. And so these cases exist. In Mexico, we do have a secretariat, a labor secretariat, that has an office. And this office directorate visits these fields, and they're in charge of notifying us when they find situations where their trafficking is probably in existence.
Here and then one in the back.
Thank you. Catherine Bliss from CSIS. This is a question for all of the panelists, really. I was interested to see in your presentations that, you know, there were, you know, specific projects and specific initiatives that had involved personnel from law enforcement countries in all three countries, or at least between two at a time, between Mexico and the U.S. and Mexico and Guatemala. And I was interested to know, you know, what it is that is done to familiarize law enforcement agencies in one country with the practices and the laws and the customs in the other. Do you exchange personnel? Do people get detailed from one agency to another? Sort of, how does that take place? Or, you know, what recommendations could be made for improving that kind of communication?
Okay. And maybe for efficiency, we'll take this last question in the back.
Hi, I'm Claire Silkey from Congressional Research. And I have a question about whether you think that there's going to be more assistance for these types of programs for the people from ICE through the Merida Initiative, and whether you all are talking with the funding from President Bush that must be running out soon, and whether or not there's going to be more of a focus on Merida with this type of issue. And para la gente de Mexico y Guatemala,
and for the people of Mexico and Guatemala, have you seen with the economic crisis an increase in this type of cases, and also with the increase in security issues along the border, if there are more migrants who have to take risks and if they're being abused by the traffickers? If the difficulty increases, and for the coyotes, I've read that there is a relationship between security and along the border and this situation.
To the presentations, and each one will get a shot on international cooperation, funding, economic situation, and cross coyotes.
Thank you very much. The crisis, the economic crisis, has definitely allowed us to see a greater flow of people who are moving, some within the country and also those to foreign countries. In the case of Guatemala, we have also observed not only the movement of Guatemalans, but also the movement of other nationalities, not only because of financial crises. We have Honduras, for example, where there's a political crisis, and we've observed more people traveling because of this. You don't see this in this panel, but there's another one with regard to drug trafficking. In recent months, two concrete cases have arisen during the government of the de facto government. In Guatemala, we noted de facto in Honduras, and in Guatemala we have intercepted different movements of drugs. And two of them were very large amounts, and these were in trailers, in tractor trailers, and they've come from Honduras, so we don't know if there's a total control or if they're being taken over. It's not my subject of expertise, but I'm mentioning this as facts that came out in the media. So that's how they were identified by the security law enforcement agencies. As far as migrants and leaving because of an economic crisis, yes, and in the case of Honduras, it's for the political crisis. With regard to cooperation and specific projects, there's several experiences focusing on training and prevention and fighting these crimes, and also exchanging experts, and in some cases they have been officials have gone from Guatemala to other countries and have done a type of internship. With regard to experts who have gone to provide training in Guatemala, in the beginning the focus was in previous years on prevention because it was necessary to take action in the area of prevention and fighting the problem. And now we need to go more in depth. It's not that this hasn't been done. Training has been given to those who are involved in the justice system, but also nowadays it's necessary in the case of Guatemala to reinforce the training, because as I mentioned, this year a new law went into force, and this needs to be brought to the knowledge of applying it throughout the whole legal system so that the cases can be brought to justice with effective measures in the end. Thank you. With regard to collaboration, what our office does is exchanges of experiences with people from countries like Guatemala, El Salvador, and Costa Rica, and Honduras, Nicaragua, Chile, Argentina, and most of them in Latin America, with Spain, it's a very important contributor, France and Romania, and the United States, obviously, the U.S., the exchanges. Very intensive, and as the panel clearly said, since 2005, before the law existed on trafficking, the subject existed. It was a point of cooperation between the two countries. There have been efforts made as well to bring the two legal systems closer. Mexico is going through a transition, as you may know, of the trial system with regard to criminal cases. The system is changing as far as the inquisitorial method to a more oral tradition. And this means that the points of contact will have to be not only on a specific level of experience exchange for struggling against human trafficking, but also how to bring to light these crimes in the new systems, how to make people aware of them. Maybe once the transition takes place of our legal system, we'll have to reestablish and determine if this shelter will be something under the responsibility of the state or not, to have a balance. Now, with regard to the Merida initiative, with regard to trafficking, human trafficking, it was one of the subjects mentioned. And we'll see if funds will be obtained, but not those that are for other subject matter. But the first will take most of the financial resources. And the financial crisis is a factor of vulnerability. We aren't seeing it as far as the number of investigations that we carry out. But yes, we've noted that there are new modalities, new ways of doing this. There's more surveillance on the border. It's not that the problem is being reduced, but rather we're seeing new ways of going about it. The only coyotes that I like is Correcaminos, the Roadrunner. That's the only coyote that I like.
I thought I spoke loud enough. But from a case agent's perspective, when working in international human trafficking or human smuggling case, the thing I like to do is get the countries on board as soon as possible because, for example, especially if you have your target that's operating in another country, as I spoke of, the target that I had operating in Belize, you have to work with that attaché office to try and identify if that person can be expelled or very little is what that person's immigration status or residency may be in that country, because then you fall into terms of what the extradition laws may be, if there are any, or if there are other avenues that you could take as far as expelling them out of that country. And also to just get the support and the cooperation, as I stated earlier. Sometimes we may work something, and we're working as a human smuggling case, and the country may say, well, hey, this guy's violating some other law. He's selling our national documents, and it's a mandatory 10-year minimum. Well, we may want to reconsider that and work with that country to just get him prosecuted on that, since he may get a stiffer sentence. So I think it's very important for international cooperation to start as early as possible and to get working with our attaché offices and our vetted units to get all those things started and get the ball rolling on these cases.
And just to touch up on that, we do have attachés located in the embassies worldwide, and they do have an area of responsibility. In terms of Mexico, there is a unit in Mexico. Agents are sent there temporarily to work cases as well. So we do have a presence internationally. In terms of assistance, the funding is running out from the President's TIP initiative, but we do receive funding. In terms of our forced labor programs, child sex tourism, and human trafficking. So those three programs do overlap with each other, and so the funds are expended to each of those programs as well. In terms of the Merida initiative specifically, I can get back to you with more details about that regarding our efforts with that.
Well, great. Thank you all for being such an excellent audience. And in particular, I want to thank our panelists and ask you to join me in thanking our panelists for an excellent discussion.